James, why does the Federal Reserve represent enslavement?
Well, I think there are a couple of ways to approach that question, but and one of them is to go through the whole history of the Federal Reserve System and the Federal Reserve Act and what it is and what it does. And you can talk about the Federal Open Market Committee and the Board of Governors and the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks, which are admitted private corporations, by the way. And I have a clip in the documentary of the Federal Reserve's own senior legal counsel admitting to that. But that's the kind of explanation where you get lost in the intricacies and the details and people's eyes start to glaze over. Really, ultimately, at base, it boils down to a very simple idea, which is that in 1913, with the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, a very small, politically connected financial elite at the very top of the financial pyramid really performed and conducted a coup d'etat of the United States government, or at least specifically that function of the U.S. government that makes it a national sovereign entity, which is the issuing of the nation's money supply. And by monopolizing that function, that small financial elite, and which continues down to today, has managed to not only affect economic oppression, which I think we can all understand from the control of the money supply, but also political oppression. Because the topics that you deal with every day on Breaking the Set, and I deal with at the Corbett Report, the political topics and military-industrial complex and the intelligence agencies and all of these things rest on the economic and monetary base that is undergirded by the Federal Reserve System. And it's through that system and through the tools of that system that that financial elite has managed to really wield power over the U.S. government for the past century, and of course the people of the America and people all around the world who are tied in one way or another to the American economy.
It was interesting to see kind of those global protests about the Federal Reserve. I thought that was really interesting about your documentary. Let's talk about what aspects of the Fed are private and which are public, because I think when people hear Federal Reserve, they just think government only.
That's right. So once again, this is not a bank, it is a system. And that system has different parts that that are formed in different ways. The private section of this is the Federal Reserve banks, which are regional banks, the most prominent of which is the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, but they're in St. Louis and San Francisco and elsewhere around the country. And these regional banks are admitted private corporations with private boards. But the Board of Governors, for example, in Washington, D.C., is appointed by the president, and the Federal Open Market Committee, which decides monetary policy, is a mixture of the Board of Governors and people on the boards of those privately owned regional banks. So it is, on paper at least, it's supposed to be what's called a decentralized central bank, and it's supposed to be a mishmash of public and private interests so that they offset each other and there's neither political control nor private control over the economy. That's what it's supposed to be on paper, but of course, when you actually get down to brass tacks, the president is not just picking names out of a hat when he's trying to find the people for the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. Those people are being drawn, obviously, from Wall Street itself. And there's obviously a high proportion of people who have a background in the banking industry who end up in the Federal Reserve Board of Governors and sitting there on the Federal Open Market Committee deciding the monetary policy of the country.
Right, of course, maintaining that whole inherent corruption there. And of course, you point out that the basis of central banking is that fractional reserve system, which is inherently fraudulent. I wanted you to break down why.
Well, people have this image that when they go into a bank and they get a loan, a car loan or a mortgage, that the bank is somehow moving piles of cash around in their vault in order to put that in their account. Of course, that's not what's actually happening. The banks, through their charters in the Federal Reserve System, have been divested, have the power to create that money out of nothing. And they do so at a prescribed rate. The banks can create a certain amount of money, depending on how much money they have parked at the Federal Reserve. And that's called the fractional reserve rate. And that can go up or down. But the point is that the banks are able to create more money than they actually have. And with that money that they create out of nothing, really, they are then able to charge interest on it and earn that not only the money back, but also the money, the interest on that, on those loans. So that in effect, when you go into a bank to get a loan, the bank is simply creating that money into your account, and then you are working for the next 5 or 10 or 20 or whatever the duration of that loan is, 20 years, 30 years, if it's a mortgage, you are working with your blood, sweat, and tears years to back up that money that they created out of nothing, which is a system that works very well for the banks and the banksters, but not so well for the average person at the bottom of that financial pyramid.
Right. It's insane when you actually break it down what's happening there. You say reform is futile, though, that radical change is necessary. Why not just give Congress full control of the Fed instead of ending it completely?
Giving Congress control of the monetary policy would at least be better than what exists now, and especially if it was created as debt-free money, because there is no reason that the U.S. government has to be in debt at all. It can issue its own money, and whatever they use, whatever imprimatur of the federal government they use to issue bonds, is the same imprimatur they can use to issue paper notes. So it would be a step up, and it is one solution that is advocated by some quarters. I don't think it's going to be the be-all and end-all solution, because ultimately, I think what we're fighting here is a centralized system of monopoly cartel control over the money supply, and I think in order to effectively combat that, we have to do the exact opposite, which is decentralize and get away from monopoly and cartel control towards a completely decentralized system that I think the key point is there's not only one solution, there are many solutions. Why do we have to always transact with the same currency every time we do a transaction? Maybe I want to use cryptocurrency when I'm online, but I want to barter when I'm at a farmer's market, but I want to use a local exchange trading system to interact with stores in my community, and I want to use precious metals if I'm interacting with a national chain. I mean, there's lots of different ways we can interact in the economy, and we've been trained all our lives that only these pieces of paper, these Federal Reserve notes, are what money can possibly be, and I think that's the fundamental lie of this system.
James, I've found this to be a common thread, of course, among alternative media, specifically focusing on just the Federal Reserve. But isn't the Fed just one small piece of the entire global financial system that's equally corrupt?
It is one piece of a broader global financial system. There's no doubt about that. But it's not a small piece. It's a very large and important piece, obviously, in this time of the U.S. global hegemon, which, again, is undergirded by these Federal Reserve notes, the petrodollar, which has been in effect since Nixon took the country off the gold standard in the 1970s. And that petrodollar is exceptionally important, again, to everything that we see going on in the world these days. And obviously, what's happening in the Middle East is very much affected by this. So the Federal Reserve, I think, is the most important single piece of that puzzle. But you are right. I mean, this does interlock with a lot of other central banks around the world, specifically in Basel, Switzerland, at the Bank for International Settlements, which is the central bank of central banks. And I think that would be very good fodder for a future documentary to talk about the ways that these banks do link up and the type of global control that ultimately is being sought by these same financial interests.
Exactly, especially since we're in that global monetary system right now. Of course, every small piece does affect everyone on the planet. Doesn't look good, James. Thanks for breaking it down in the documentary. Really informative. Host of the Corbett Report. Everyone, check it out.
Thanks for having me on.